It's Monday, September 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, Pope Francis prepares to conclude his historic visit to the United States.
One of the best indicators of whether a country will succeed is how it treats its women.
Presidents from China and the United States address women's rights. Also ahead, the U.S. Congress had an eventful week as members prepare for another budget battle. And time for country music from a rock and roll star. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Pope Francis is concluding his first visit to the United States by celebrating an open-air mass in Philadelphia with perhaps up to a million worshipers in attendance. He previously held mass in New York and Washington and was greeted along the way in each of those cities by tens of thousands of enthusiastic Catholics and well-wishers from many faiths. Standing at the birthplace of the United States, Pope Francis urged the country's immigrants, especially the largely Catholic Hispanic population, to overcome the hardships of integration while clinging to their faith. VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolovsky was there and takes us to Independence Hall.
It was the moment they had been waiting for. Francis blessed the youngest of them and even accepted a gift. Then, standing at Abraham Lincoln's old lectern, the Pope gave what was essentially a pro-immigration pep talk in Spanish.
Do not be discouraged by whatever challenges and hardships you face.
He told them never to be ashamed of their traditions, noting the many Hispanics in the crowd.
Pienso en particular en la vibrante fe.
I think in particular of the vibrant faith which so many of you possess, the deep sense of family life, and all those other values which you have inherited.
This is the key speech of Francis's 2 days in Philadelphia, and his message is clearly falling on willing ears in this historic setting.
All he says is almost what I also think, so it's very close to my heart.
I came so close to him, I can't believe it. I didn't take any picture, but I showed him this photo of my family.
And no one seemed to mind this anti-immigrant protester who bashed Francis for not speaking in English and criticizing capitalism.
He's one of the world leaders pushing the United States of America towards socialism.
Hispanic Americans make up a third of the U.S. Catholic Church at a time when it's losing adherents who are the offspring of earlier waves of immigration. Jerome Sokolovsky, VOA News, Philadelphia.
And you can see some great video that accompanies this report. Check it out after our program at voanews.com. Time now to check out reactions to the Pope's final mass during his visit to the stateside. And as always, our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, is here in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, we know about hashtag Pope in D.C. and hashtag Pope in New York. So what's today's trending hashtag?
It's hashtag Pope in Philly. No brainer there, right?
Right.
Pope Francis just wrapped up his final mass in America in Philadelphia. And I said before that hashtag Pope in DC automatically generates an image of the Capitol in your tweet. And hashtag Pope in US generates an image of the Pope with the American flag in the background. So it's only natural that hashtag Pope in Philly also get its own image.
Of course. Mm-hmm. What kind of image does hashtag Pope in Philly generate?
It's an image of the Liberty Bell. Mm. And I know it's not too familiar to our international audience, but it's a symbol of American independence from the British rule, and it's located inside the Independence Hall. And fun fact, it used to be the Pennsylvania State House.
And I might add, it's now listed as a World Heritage Site.
Exactly.
Are there any other trending hashtags related to his visit?
There is. Hashtag Pope in three words, that's number three in Arabic number, is also very popular today. Here are some examples. Rebuilding our nation. Inspired by him. Riot on economics. And last but not least, massive traffic jams. Many of these tweets also come with memes, so it's worth checking them out.
And what about some recommendations on Twitter accounts to follow?
Sure, we just heard from Jerome, and he has been live tweeting from Philadelphia throughout today. He's on Twitter at Jerome, S-O-C-O. Now, my favorite tweet from him is a shot of Pope Francis kissing a baby from his Pope Mobile on his way to the Mass. That's all for me today.
Thanks so much for being here. G Abby Lee, of course, is on Twitter at G Abby Lee, and she has her own little G Abby Lee mobile to ride out of
image.
Studio 22. Also, our VOA International Edition team is found at VOA_IE. We hope you follow us. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. Chinese President Xi Jinping called on world leaders Sunday to boost efforts to improve women's rights. Speaking at a United Nations summit on gender equality, the Chinese leader pledged $10 million to the UN Agency for Women, while drawing sharp criticism from activists and rights groups for China's imprisonment of female activists. There were women arrested in several cities as they prepared to hand out leaflets about sexual harassment on public transit and were later released under judicial supervision. Xi, who organized the event, also pledged to build 100 health centers and 100 school startups for girls in the developing world over the next 5 years. President Barack Obama and British Prime Minister David Cameron did not address that meeting, but in his remarks at the UN General Assembly Sunday, Mr. Obama did mention the role of women in society.
Development is threatened by old attitudes, especially those that deny rights and opportunity to women. In too many places, girls are less likely to be in school than boys. Globally, women are less likely to have a job than men and are more likely to live in poverty. And I've said this before, and I will keep repeating it. One of the best indicators of whether a country will succeed is how it treats its women. When women have an education, when women have a job, their children are more likely to get an education. Their families are healthier and more prosperous. Their communities and countries do better as well. So every nation, all of our nations, must invest in the education and health and skills of our women and girls. And I have to say, I do not have patience for the excuse of, well, we have our own ways of doing things. I understand. We understand that there is a long tradition in every society of discriminating against women. But that's not an excuse for taking a new path in order to make sure that everyone in a society has opportunity.
Washington's UN Ambassador Samantha Power acknowledged major improvements in gender parity in large parts of the world since the 1995 Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action on Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment. In her address, she pointed to reforms in primary education and efforts to curb extreme poverty, but she also noted the 20 international cases of gender discrimination recently highlighted by the United States, which includes the arrest of 71-year-old Chinese journalist Gao Yu. A new poll of Republican candidates seeking their party's presidential nomination is showing frontrunners Donald Trump and Ben Carson with strong leads, and former technology executive Carly Fiorina tied for third place with Florida Senator Marco Rubio. On the Democratic side, the NBC News Wall Street Journal poll shows frontrunner Hillary Clinton continuing to lose ground to left-leaning Bernie Sanders, with her earlier double-digit lead now cut to just 7 points at 42-35%. Meanwhile, in Washington, Congress has in the past week heard an address by Pope Francis, seen the resignation of Republican House Speaker John Boehner, and is facing a possible financial shutdown of the federal government. In the studio with me is VOA Senate correspondent Mike Bowman. Mike, we have a lot to sort through.
Jim, I hardly know where to begin. Less than 24 hours after the Pope exhorted all members of Congress to work together in harmony and to give up essentially fruitless battles, Speaker John Boehner, who was seen weeping during the papal address, came in front of cameras and said, "I'm leaving Congress at the end of next month." I don't know that there's necessarily a connection between those two, but the timing is certainly interesting. And this comes as, indeed, Congress has a deadline of midnight Wednesday to extend the federal government's spending authority, or else many federal operations will come to a screeching halt at 12:01 Thursday morning. So there we are, Jim.
And all this comes as we here on the East Coast of the United States are about to experience what they call a blood moon, a lunar eclipse, as the moon is at its closest orbit to Earth and makes it look huge.
Indeed.
And I don't know. It's just a confluence of events here.
Speaker Boehner went on national television just a few hours ago and predicted that the shutdown would be averted. Now, there is a narrow path to keep the government funded, but to make it work, members of Congress will have to work together, Democrats and Republicans, and show a great deal of discipline. And if there's one thing that seems to be lacking in Congress, it's bipartisanship and discipline.
Yes.
The main sticking point has been whether or not the U.S. government will continue to fund Planned Parenthood, which is the leading provider of abortion services in the United States. It is a nonprofit organization, but it gets about $500 million worth of funding from the federal government every year. And top-ranking officials of Planned Parenthood earlier this year were secretly taped discussing the sale of organs from aborted fetuses. This drove social conservatives into an absolute frenzy and prompted many declarations that Planned Parenthood would not get another penny of taxpayer funding. Well, last week, Senate Democrats defeated a funding measure that would have defunded Planned Parenthood. And the Republican leader of the Senate essentially acknowledged defeat and brought up a clean spending bill, meaning continuing all current federal funding, including for Planned Parenthood. And the Senate will begin voting on that on Monday, and that could be wrapped up on Wednesday. And so you will have a situation where this bill, which is likely to pass the Senate, will go to the House with essentially a lame duck speaker and a Republican caucus in an absolute tizzy, very divided Republican caucus. This bill will hit the House of Representatives with hours to go before the shutdown occurs. We will see what happens. It could be that that the bill passes both houses, goes to President Obama's desk at 12:45. He signs it into law and the shutdown is averted. But there are many steps that have to happen before that occurs.
Right.
And at any point in this process, things could get muddied.
And it's possible that they could come up with a budget agreement that perhaps doesn't include this element, continues to fund the government for a short period of time, and then they continue to discuss this for a more permanent solution.
What is being discussed is not a full funding of the federal government for an entire year at the levels that were agreed to. This is simply a stopgap measure. Mm-hmm. Even if this passes, the federal government would only be funded at current levels, not next year levels, only until the 11th of December. at which point the money would run out yet again, and we would be right back to square one with 2 weeks to go before Christmas. I can't wait, Jim.
I can't either, and it keeps us in business, thankfully. We thank Michael Bowman for stopping by our studio today. Mike, thank you,
Jim.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Japanese mountain climber Nobukazu Kurike has failed in his fifth solo attempt to reach the summit of Mount Everest. Kurike announced on his Facebook page Sunday that it took too much time to move in deep snow, and he realized if he had kept going, he would not be able to come back alive. The 33-year-old Kurike was attempting to climb the world's tallest peak despite losing all of his fingers and one thumb to frostbite after spending 2 days in a snow hole at 8,230 meters in altitude and in temperatures of 20 degrees below Celsius, that during an attempt in 2012. Well, perhaps he can warm up to some music. This gentleman made his fortune with the rock and roll band The Eagles. Now, singer Don Henley has returned to his country roots with a new CD called Cass Country. As David Byrd found out for International Edition, Henley gets some of his high-profile help in a mix of new songs and some of the hurting tunes that formed his musical soul in East Texas.
Take a picture of this. This is me leaving. Take a picture of this.
Don Henley is best known as the drummer and co-founder of the Eagles. But his solo albums, including Building the Perfect Beast, The End of the Innocents, and Inside Job, have added platinum records to his collection as well. On Cass County, Henley returns to his roots with rich lyrics and musicianship that break the modern country mold. He gets some help from the likes of Martina McBride, Miranda Lambert, Merle Haggard, Trisha Yearwood, Vince Gill, Dolly Parton, and Mick Jagger. The 68-year-old musician says that picking the right blend of voices was very much like casting a movie.
You know, and I was extremely fortunate in that nobody turned me down. You know, I was really delighted when Merle Haggard said yes, and when Mick Jagger said yes, and Dolly Parton, and all of them, you know.
You can get burned. You try to rekindle that old flame.
Henley released the first single off the album, That Old Flame, a duet with Martina McBride, to iTunes. The song speaks of two lovers who have rediscovered one another after several years, with the songwriter asking his one-time flame if it's him she misses or just her long-lost youth. Henley also has several covers that hearken to his youth in Linden, Texas, a town of 2,400 near the Arkansas and Louisiana borders. They include Jesse Winchester's The Brand New Tennessee Waltz, Jesse Lee Kincaid's 1966 single She Sang Hymns Out of Tune, and the Louvin Brothers' 1955 hit When I Stop Dreaming, a duet with Dolly Parton.
When I stop dreaming, that's when I'll stop loving you.
Henley says that recording with Parton was a special treat, even though the version of the song they did was higher than her comfort range.
She did a couple of takes, and she came back in the control room. She said, Well, that key is a little high for me. I said, well, I'm sorry, that's just the key we've recorded in. She said, well, I'll just have to rear back and get it. And about two takes later, she had reared back and got it.
Don Henley also covers Tiff Merritt's Bramble Rose with a little help from Miranda Lambert and Mick Jagger. Henley says that Jagger added just the right element to the song.
I was so thrilled and delighted when he agreed to do it. And the bonus about that is that he played that killer harmonica part, which I never would have thought of. It didn't occur to me at all, and I forgot what a great harp player he is. And it really added another texture and another color and a whole other dimension to the song.
Don Henley says he included the covers because he believes that music is getting away from its roots, and not just country music, but all genres. Authenticity is something the singer says he isn't hearing much right now, but fans can hear it from him on Cass County. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Been listening to International Edition, and you can find us at our website, voanews.com. Occasionally, our director Tracy Carter is called upon to direct without a script, and he always does so with exceptional quality. Thank you, Tracy. Our engineer, Aydin Utku, just as well. Thank you, Aydin, and we thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Economic disparity, often in combination with other factors, can open the door to violent extremism. Across many parts of the Middle East and North Africa, economic policies have led to the creation of parallel but deeply polarized economies, said U.S. Undersecretary of State for Economic Growth, Energy, and the Environment, Catherine Novelli. One is formal and often extends the full range of society's benefits to a relatively small and privileged group, but exacerbates perceptions of unfairness. The other economy is informal, marked by insecurity and characterized by low pay and little hope for a better future. According to the World Bank, the typical country in the Middle East and North Africa produces about 27% of its GDP in the informal economy and employs 67% of its labor force informally. In many countries, it is almost impossible for an individual to move from the informal sector to the formal sector, said Undersecretary Novelli. Women, she said, participate in the Middle East's workforce at the world's lowest rate. Many women, when they can't find jobs in the formal sector, become discouraged over time and end up dropping out of the labor force. ISIL has exploited these frustrations in its recruitment efforts by promising women valued positions in their state, and hundreds of women have fallen prey to this narrative. It is important to note that ISIL wants to cast blame on capitalism, or modernity, for creating many of these inequities. In the Middle East and North Africa, ISIL presents a false choice between the unjust status quo and a romanticized version of a 7th-century economy. The most effective way to confront these challenges is for countries to pursue sound market economy principles, embrace transparency and the rule of law, and ensure that all people have the opportunity to succeed. Embracing such reforms can go a long way toward blunting the message of violent extremists.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.